Losing your job after years of dedicated service is traumatic. Make sure that you receive the proper notice and financial compensation.
People who come into your office will routinely burst into tears after being let go from a job that they've had for a number of years that they feel as committed to sometimes as they feel to their own family. And then when that gets taken away, inevitably there's a sense of loss. And as their counsel and giving them advice, you have to be compassionate. And it's not hard to feel their pain.
If you've been let go, contact employment lawyer Craig Lewis at employmentlawyermississauga.com. Well, I
told you so. All right, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. You are listening to the Drew Marshall Show. That was Meredith Moon performing live over the last hour. Boy, that was delightful stuff. I'm a big fan of the banjo. I know Tommy Emmanuel has many banjo jokes, but I'm not like Tommy Emmanuel. I'm nicer. I'm nicer than Tommy.
Right.
I was telling her to put the mic on for you.
Oh, she already had it, though. That's why when you heard me when I was talking.
Are you criticizing my in-studio sign language? My secret code sign language?
As long as you're using the pointer finger, I'm fine.
Sheridan Voysey, he's a writer, he's a speaker, he's a broadcaster, and he's British. And he joins us on The Drew Marshall Show. Hello, Sheridan Voysey.
Drew Marshall, good to talk to you.
Yes, quite right, old bean, quite right.
Hey, actually, you're only getting half the story there. I'm actually Australian originally, and then I've kind of been planted here for the last 7 years, although I do have British parents, so I'm kind of a bit of both.
Where in Oz?
I was born in Brisbane. I then had 6 years in Perth. I had 5 years in Sydney. If you were to ask me where is home in Australia, I'd say it's Sydney. And then we moved here in 2011. So I've got both a British passport and an Australian passport. So, you know, I can pick and choose who I want to barrack for in the cricket and the football and everything else.
Okay. Barrack is not a word we use over here. Please use proper English. Barrack. Tim doesn't know
what
barrack.
I don't even know
what... Cheer. Cheer. You cheer. You barrack for a team.
Barrack is where you put troops when they're sleeping.
That's where you put troops when they're sleeping. Yeah.
Yes.
What suburb in Sydney area?
Do you remember Drummoyne? Because I know you spent some time in Sydney, didn't you?
Yes.
So remember the Inner West, Drummoyne, Five Dock, around those areas?
Yes, I do remember. I was up in the Blue Mountains and went to Drummoyne. Actually, I think I spoke in Drummoyne at a big event one time. I think it was.
Okay.
Oh no, that was Dramamine. So what I'd like to do is to find out who this Sheridan Voysey character is, because he's written numerous books. Sheridan, seriously, you're like the Dick Van Dyke of broadcasting and Christendom. You do a little bit of everything. You write. You broadcast. You like. What is the one thing you're the best at?
Well, I mean, there's a story behind that question in the sense that, I've had 20 years in broadcasting, but actually since we moved to the UK, I haven't been hosting a show, and I tell you, I miss it every day. But I now have so much more opportunity to be on this end of the desk, just like I am with you now. So I actually love that. So what am I best at? Oh, I don't know. I think I probably communicate best when I write first and then speak out of the writing. And yet there is nothing like doing a live show, is there, Drew Marshall? There is nothing like the thrill of sitting in that chair right now and waiting for the phone calls to come and to have people drop out at the last minute and all the thrill that brings.
or give you the wrong phone number. You know, that's fun.
I've heard that's happened in the past to people that have tried to be on your show in the past, but who could that be? But, you know, there's things like that that happen. You know, it brings a great joy to the moment, and I really do miss that. So, I don't know, Drew. I writing, speaking, broadcasting, I hate writing. I will tell you that. I do not like writing, but I like having written. I know that somebody famous said that before me, but it's very, very true. I enjoy having written afterwards, and then I can look back and see a good paragraph, see a good chapter, see a good article, and say, okay, that was worth it. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was painful.
So why do you do what you do? Well, like, why aren't you just, I use the word just now. Anything I say is going to sound like a loser job. Why aren't you just a politician?
Well, my goodness. I wouldn't have originally seen myself as being a communicator way back in the day. In fact, I've just finished the manuscript on a new book and actually write about this very thing in that, in the sense that, you know, I was an only child for the first 12 years of my life. I was very used to solitude, very used to my own company. My first speaking gig was to MC a friend's wedding, and it was just the most excruciating experience on earth. You know, I started off with a few light jokes and nobody laughed, and it just got worse from that point on.
Sounds like the Drew Marshall Show.
Oh, only worse. So I walked away from that event and I actually said, you know, I'm never, ever going to speak in public again. And yet here I am all these years later. So, I mean, really that comes down to my faith experience. I became a Christian at the age of 19. I was kind of trying to find my life in nightclubs. That I was starting to get some success in nightclubs, like, you know, house music, DJing and stuff like that. And yet it wasn't filling the void inside. And that led ultimately then to the sense that I really had to speak. I had to communicate in some kind of way. And so I guess it's just gone from there.
Have you done the Enneagram?
No, I haven't. In fact, it took me years to do MBTI, Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
So I haven't done the Enneagram. I'm very behind the times on this.
No. I mean, it's not a matter. It's not a litmus test for whether you're hip or not. That's for sure. But I know. I was just wondering, you know, because being an only child and the things that you've said so far, my mind is so Enneagram focused these days. We're going to actually have an hour segment every show in July. Focused on the Enneagram, and I was just wondering if you'd heard of it or if you'd done it, because basically, I guess at the bottom of all that rubbish that I've just rattled on about is, I want to know what's wrong with you.
where do we begin?
Yes.
I'm prone to comparison with other people. I can be envious and jealous of other people's success. My eyes have looked at wrong things. I mean, where do we want to begin? Where do we want to end?
Yeah. How vulnerable can you be being a Jesus guy, being a broadcaster, and being in the UK? Because there's a fair bit of, excuse me, we don't speak of such things over there. And then you combine the faith world, and we really don't speak about things in that world. So combine those two worlds, and how open and vulnerable can you be, Sheridan?
Well, it's really interesting. There's kind of two levels to that. When I came over to the UK in 2011, I read a book called Watching the English. It's by an Oxford sociologist named Kate Fox, and she talked about the fact that the average Brit won't give you their name until the moment before you're about to marry their daughter. And it's about right as well. So if they're not going to give you their name, I mean, I know it even with our own community here, our own neighborhood, walking the dog, you get to know people's dogs' names first, and maybe 2 or 3 months later, you will then progress to getting to know their name. So absolutely, if that's going to be a barrier, how much so talking about really deep things? Now, here's the interesting thing. For the first, I mean, I went into broadcasting in the mid-90s, and then I ended up hosting a national show in Australia, which is all about talking about life, faith, and culture, but doing it in a way that would communicate to a broad audience, just as you're doing. But, you know, we were nowhere near as hip or as challenging as you, Drew Marshall.
Yeah, baby.
So many years of my life was all about putting the best foot forward of Christianity. And during those same 10 years when things were going very well for me, you know, I had dreams of writing books and that started to happen. I had dreams of speaking at conferences. That started to happen. I had dreams of starting this national show with a particular focus. That happened. But during that same 10 years, my wife and I were trying to start a family and were utterly failing at every single attempt. I mean, you name it, pretty much, we probably tried it. We tried special diets. We tried special supplements. We tried chiropractic, and to this day, Drew, I do not know why we tried chiropractic. We tried IVF numerous times. We tried healing prayer, of course, for people of faith. We waited for 2 years on the New South Wales adoption list. The phone call never came. So things were not going well there. That came to a crunch in Christmas of 2010. It came down to a point where my wife needed a new beginning. And that's really, long story short, how we ended up in the UK, because she got offered a job at a little university you may have heard of called Oxford University. Pretty cool gig to get.
It'll do in a pinch. It'll do. Yes.
I know. Not quite as good as Des Moines College of TAFE or higher education.
TAFE. I haven't heard the word TAFE in so long. Do you know what that is, Tim?
For those listeners out there who don't, why don't you let them know?
Oh, right, Tim. Okay, let me do that. TAFE is the school for sweat hogs. Is it not? It's kind of like the practical school.
Oh, okay.
The how to learn woodworking, but it's in college kind of school.
Okay.
What do we say it over here, kids?
Vocational.
Vocational school. Is that right, Sheridan?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
So yeah, it wouldn't be like your American colleges or probably even your Canadian colleges, but it'd be like the British colleges where, yeah, it's very much vocationally oriented. So, yeah. So anyway, Maren got this gig at Oxford. We came over here, but all of my life kind of then completely changed, because then suddenly I'm not doing what I've been doing for the last 20 years. Long story short, a friend of mine named Adrian Plass, you may have heard of him,
Adrian.
You may have even had him on the show. He suggested to me that we should write our story into a book. That story got written into a book called Resurrection Year. And that was the time where I really got vulnerable and really talked about the challenge to both of our faiths, actually, that God wasn't coming through. He wasn't answering our prayer, whether we were trying to be faithful in this way, when we were praying in faith over here, and it just wasn't happening. We still weren't getting our children. And going vulnerable with that and sharing all the details as to how that difficult time was. And I was writing that in real time, actually. Our resurrection year was our 12 months of coming to the UK, our first 12 months and kind of starting again, coming back to life, if you like. And towards the end of writing that book, I wasn't too sure how it was going to end, and I was still kind of wrestling. The thing is, Drew, that in going vulnerable like that, in sharing the story, not simply the high points, or not just the "we've been through some tough times, but God is still faithful anyway," that kind of line, it woke echoes in so many people, both people of Christian faith and also people that don't have any faith. And it initiated me into a tribe in which we could talk about life, faith, and those kinds of things at a much more deeper level, because I was willing to go vulnerable. So yes, it's a little bit difficult in certain cultures. Yes, there are certain things you don't naturally talk about. When you do, you find that you have a door open into people's lives, ears, hearts even, in a way that you didn't have before.
Really well said. This is, I had so many people say to me, most of them were from the UK or from Ireland, or I don't know, they had some kind of weird accent, and they said to me, "You got to listen to this, Sheridan. Everyone assumed that I knew you. You know, oh, Sheridan, would you know Sheridan Voice?" And I wonder if it was just that sort of vulnerability label that has been put on at least me, and now it sounds like you. And I think maybe that was the connection. So anyway, I'm glad we finally, because this is our first time speaking, is it not?
It is. It is our first time. I mean, same thing for me, Drew, in the fact that I would hear about you and your show. And I remember somebody was saying, he's interviewed James Brown and everything. And I think also there was that shared desire to, how can we have a faith conversation that incorporates all sorts of people from all sorts of backgrounds?
Yes.
Even though, certainly in my case, you know, come from a Christian perspective, I know that you've got a Christian background. And so kind of that's a starting point. But, you know, we open up the doors and say, come on, everybody can come in. I want to hear what you have to say.
Yep.
And there's not a lot of shows around doing that. So I think that's probably the connection also.
It really is pathetic that we stand out because we speak to others who don't believe the same thing. What the heck is that?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I think the wool is over our eyes sometimes, because we as people of Christian faith actually think that the world is listening to us, but actually they're not. And so we keep on using our Christian lingo and we use phrases like TAFE, you know, which other people in other countries don't understand. Well, you know, we use the Christian versions of that, and we think that everybody's listening because they're hanging on our every word, because
yep,
this is the word of God. Actually, that's not the case at all. No, you know, we start from a position of humanity, and then we can have all sorts of interesting conversations from that point on, which is exactly the way that you you have been doing this for years.
Live on the line is Sheridan Voysey. He is a writer, he is a speaker, he is a broadcaster. He's won all sorts of awards for being a super Christian man. And SheridanVoysey.com is the website. Sheridan Voysey, V-O-Y-S-E-Y, SheridanVoysey.com. Sheridan lives in Oxford. Is that true, Sheridan?
Sure is, and we've got a gorgeous sunny day. Can you imagine that? A sunny day in England. Yes, they do happen. About 12 of them a year.
Listen, I watched that royal,
wedding?
Wedding, and wedding. That was a beautiful day. I was enthralled with how gorgeous. That was like the perfect tourism video for the UK. Did you happen to, you know there was a wedding in your country recently, right? A big one?
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, I heard it was kind of pretty big, and there was a preacher there and everything. So, we were actually on holidays. We were overseas, and overseas over here means that you can go to little places like Spain and everything. We were in the Canary Islands, and so on. I didn't actually get to see the wedding. I was, airport on our way back home. But, I heard about that.
Were you in Massapalomas?
Ooh,
no, not Ooh, Papa Loma Blanca. No, what were you in Gran Canaria?
No, we're actually in Fuerteventura.
Ah.
So it's the island that's actually closest to Monaco, and it's actually when you get there, it's incredibly barren. In fact, they shot scenes from one of the last Star Wars films there, so incredibly barren. And you're kind of going, what on earth have we come to? But actually, the little resorts and everything are really lovely. And I was completely burnt out from writing this last book, and it was just one of those times where you just want to go and lie by a pool and sip pina coladas and stream music all day. That's all you wanted to do. You didn't want to think about anything.
No.
And so it was great for that kind of thing.
Well, if you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain, if you're not into yoga
or health food
and have half a brain,
if you like,
stop it. Can't continue with that song.
Oh man,
there's some great
remixes out there, and the remixes are going through my head at the moment. I was just going to start beatboxing.
Oh, please, you'd fit right in with that awkward white guy move. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, no, I was in Gran Canaria at the end of. I did the Camino, and when I finished the Camino, I went to a monastery in one of the Canary Islands. And it was fascinating, that whole scene over there.
Do you know their name for dogs, not for birds?
What? Oh, yes. Oh, I see. So the Canary Islands are not named after birds.
No,
they're named
after
dogs. Ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Clavin with useless information here.
Hey, there you go.
Thank you, Cliffy. Sheridan, are you certain there's a God?
Certainty is an interesting word with interesting history and an interesting use today. And we tend to read into that word something of scientific precision. And I think that can be a bit of a challenge. But yeah, I am pretty certain that there is a God. I am. As much as we have wrestled, as much as we have wondered why he hasn't answered our questions, and as much as I wonder about all sorts of things in the world, I do believe there is a God. Yeah, I would say I'm certain. With caveats on the word certain, but I would say, yeah, I'm pretty sure there is a God indeed.
How can you be so sure in something so invisible?
So my faith rests on two or three things. Number one, all of us have a search for some sort of coherence, some sort of story, some sort of worldview, some sort of paradigm that helps us interpret things, both the good in life and also the bad in life. And just like you, Drew, I mean, when you have so many people on your show and you're listening to so many different viewpoints, I cannot help. My show was on a Sunday night, and I would be awake until, like 3 o'clock in the morning, thinking about the things that we had discussed on the show and the people. We had atheists on, we had Alain de Botton on, we had people of all different faiths calling in. And so I was always thinking through, how does this fit? Does what I hold to still actually fit? And for me, the best way to look at the world in the best way that it makes sense, even though there's still some threads that aren't tied together, is the Christian view of the world in terms of the problems that we have in the world, in terms of the beauty and the goodness that you also see. Where does that come from? That's as much of a philosophical problem as the problem of pain can be. And so the Christian faith, in its broad sweeps, helps to put that into perspective. And the more and more that I kind of talk that through with people, whether it be here on BBC or whatever, it seems to light up and helps to connect dots. My faith would also rest on the resurrection of Jesus. And while I can't go back 2,000 years and be there and, you know, take records and take photos and make sure that, you know, this definitely did happen, there's good enough evidence historically that this was a reality, that I rest much more than on that these days than what I used to, I think. There is a personal element. I can talk about answered prayer as much as I can talk about ignored prayer, if you like, or unanswered prayer. And, oh gosh, I had something really brilliant to share with you just then, and I've completely forgot that. But it was just so riveting, but it was really good. There's a few things like that that are kind of the bases of faith for me, that that more and more as I kind of think these things through, and whether it be something beautiful that I experience in the world or something profound or something scientific or something historical, that it just kind of helps to make sense. It helps to pull those things together and help me work out why things are wrong, why things are right.
Okay. All right. I still don't understand, but okay. All right.
What don't you understand? Did you go to TAFE? Is it a case that, you know, we just need to, you know, bring the language down a little bit? Am I speaking in a different language?
Yes, yeah. It is. Yeah. I remember putting my foot in my mouth. It's a spiritual gift, period. But especially when I was in Australia, there's so much slang there. And I don't know if I can share any of them on air.
Oh, I know some of the words that you misuse.
Well, okay, here's one. I was speaking to the church one time, and I was referring to a bunch of rednecks that I ran into, and they're called yabos in Australia, right?
Yeah, it's not used as much, but yeah, you can still use the word yabo.
Okay, well, I didn't actually say yabo. I said abo. You know how that went down?
Oh.
Yeah, not real well.
Oh, Drew.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not good.
It's a gift.
I remember asking for a napkin at a restaurant.
Would you ask for a nappy?
A napkin.
Oh, napkin. Oh, yeah. And moving along. Moving along.
Yeah, well, over here, pants are things that you wear underneath your jeans. So you have to be very, very careful when you walk up to somebody and say, hey, I just love your pants.
Yeah. Or when you say, I'm gonna pants you. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Big problem.
Sheridan Voysey, I want people to follow you, creep on you, stalk you, and buy your stuff. What is the latest thing that people can purchase of yours? Would it be your latest book? Because the one you've just finished writing isn't out yet. True story?
That's right. Yeah. So that is coming out. The title hasn't been released yet, but that book will be all about identity, in particular, who can you become when life doesn't go as you planned it to go? So that's kind of been my story ever since coming to the UK, really, in 2011, and just my whole identity and everything that my life was about just turned upside down, and everything that I'd wanted and prayed for had gone, and suddenly I'm kind of scratching my head and twiddling my fingers at home, wondering what on earth I'm going to do with my life. So this book has kind of come out of that. It's based on a pilgrimage, actually. Great to hear you talk about the Camino. So a friend and I did a pilgrimage from Lindisfarne in the north of England.
Oh, Holy Island.
Yeah, Holy Island. And having some conversations along the way and talking about St. Cuthbert and all these great kind of people of faith and history. And so that book is all about actually, when life doesn't go as planned, that probably can be that can be the moment you discover who you really are.
Nice, yes.
And actually out of that can become the person you are meant to be.
Nice.
So that's coming out in March of 2019.
Good.
So the last book that is out at the moment is called Resilient, and that's where I spent kind of a little spiritual pilgrimage, if you like, going through the Sermon on the Mount. That was the other thing I was going to mention. Yes, the Sermon on the Mount. So Jesus' famous speech that has inspired the Martin Luther King Juniors of the world and the Gandhis of the world and the Dietrich Bonhoeffers of the world and everybody else. I really had wanted to go deep into that. So I spent, I thought I'd give myself a month reading it every day for a month. And then that went to 2 months and three and four and five. And it just really transformed me. So that would be the other reason why actually I believe there is a God, because of the profound things that Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. Three chapters in the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew 5, 6, 7, will only take you 15 minutes to read. And what the psychologists are now talking about when it comes to resilience and the things that you need to build resilience into your life, you will find them all in the Sermon on the Mount 2,000 years ago. So that's another reason why I would hold that there is a God.
The last time I was on Holy Island, which, by the way, is just below the Scottish border, in the northern part of England, and you can't get to it until the tide goes out and then a road appears and you drive across the road. Sounds very cool. Is very cool. It's a town of, a little village there of maybe, 65 people? And there's three pubs.
That's right. Exactly.
But
right. When you went over, did you walk the mud flats, though? Because that's the best way. You don't drive across the causeway. Walk the mud flats. It takes about an hour and a half, and then you're kind of following the monks as they used to do it. Anyway, that's for your next visit.
Yes. Yes, I'll bring my my hip waders. I hung out with Ray, what's his name, the guy of the that leads the faith community there. Ray
Comfort?
No, Ray Comfort. Yeah. Shut up. What's his name? Oh, anyway, he's sort of the I'm going to stop talking
Ray
about
Gunn?
Him.
I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, he's such a good interview. I can't remember his name. Sheridan, what's your last name? Voisey is on the show with us right now. A writer, speaker, broadcaster. His website is SheridanVoisey.com. You can tell by our conversation, he's another, guy who prides authenticity. It seems to be something that leaks out of him quite naturally. SheridanVoisey.com. Sheridan, I want to thank you for finally being on my show. Thank you.
I want to thank you for being patient with me while we sorted out phone numbers, my friend. It's been good to be with you.
Take care, mate. We will talk again, I'm sure.
Let's.
Yep.
Let's do it.
Sheridan Voisey, thank you.